둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Sorry, I stumbled on your name at the end there. I was like Meredith Kyle.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here for checking out the episode. I do hope you hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the entire series. You'll get three brand new interviews sent to you every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Makes it a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. All the usual places, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, and NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Some of my recent guests have included Neck Deep, talked with actor Michael Shannon about covering REM. Slater Kinney dropped in to talk about their newest record. Jack Antonoff, the super producer behind Taylor Swift and Lana Del Rey and Lorde, he joined us to discuss his latest album with his band Bleachers. We had Peter Capaldi, Doctor Who himself, here. Let's see, McKenna Grace, you know her from the new Ghostbusters movies, among many other things. She's got new music. We also talked with Janelle Monáe, Andy Taylor of Duran Duran, Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age, Dolly Parton. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith, today catching up with Bill Janovitz of Buffalo Tom. They are back with a brand new record. It's their 10th, called Jump Rope. It's their first since 2018. And we're going to, we're going to discuss what it takes to get the band back in the studio after over 35 years into their career. The drive to continue to make new music, how the pandemic informed the LP by making it more acoustic-driven, and the 60s feel that came as a bit of a byproduct of that. Bill's also going to touch on the political undercurrents behind the lead single Helmet, how comedy tends to age much more poorly than music, given time. If the Leon Russell biography he released in 2023 had any effect on his writing, and he'll let us know that he's currently working on a biography of the Cars with the surviving members. All that and more as we talk Jump Rope. It's Kyle Meredith with Bill Janovitz of Buffalo Tom.
Hi.
It's great to see you back. It's great to hear that the band is back. Been keeping up with you, and I know you've been busy, and I want to talk about some of the other stuff you've been doing with the biographies. But now that it's been a handful of years, once again, that's sort of the story usually for a Buffalo Tom record, a handful of years. What does it take to get the band back together these days?
We're at a point in our lives where each few years is a different point in our lives. I think things are starting to, it's all been sort of family related mostly. So I think that's all starting to be less of an issue as our kids are now young adults, basically, but we also had the added, as everybody did, disruption of the pandemic. I think we actually were on track to do another record much in a much shorter period of time, intervening time than we had between the previous two records. I mean, we were sort of had a little bit of momentum going, and but it allowed us to sort of just take another breather, and we were sending around different song ideas from home, that actually sort of dictated the tone of the record in more ways than one. But that explains the time kind of thing.
It's always interesting to me anytime, especially when you've got a band, you know. So again, you have individual human beings living their very individual lives, and the things that we were interested in as kids isn't always the things that we're interested in as adults. So to find that you can bring these people back together, that any band can, but you know, specifically you guys for the moment here, I mean, that's always impressive. What drives you to still make new music? Like, why does that still have to be a part of it? Which, by the way, as a greedy fan, of course, we want and we ask for. But on your side, what is it for you?
We're all creators, you know. I mean, creatives. We feel the need to. We're compelled. I mean, it's the same drive from when we were younger. I mean, the themes are slightly different that show up in the work, but you know, there's this built-in thing with Buffalo Tom. With any band, there's a chemistry. It's like, what attracted you to these people and this combination of people to begin with? And that in and of itself is like something that it's like a template or whatever. It's like something that's built. It's built there already. So you plug and play. And with Buffalo Tom, it's relatively easy. I mean, nothing is very easy. In a democracy, making art by committee in a lot of ways can be challenging, but it's also like the rewards outweigh the any negatives. And it's this, like I said, it's like putting on an old shoe or something, you know. The band is there, so you sort of feed it. But you know, we do check in with each other when we start to feel like, all right, well, I feel like it might be time for a new record, but the other guys might not, you know. Or depend not only logistically what's going on in their lives, but do they feel compelled to get in the studio and dedicate all this energy to creating something, you know? And it takes a lot of energy. And as you get older, it takes more energy. I don't necessarily feel like I have to write as much as I used to. I mean, I used to just, when we were really going in that like 90s touring and recording writing cycle, I always was writing, and that's less the case now. It's like I know when it's coming, and like a lot of artists, especially songwriters, they can put a guitar away and not write a song for a long time. It's kind of the same with me. It's like I'll just all of a sudden feel like, oh, I know that if I pick up the guitar today, some idea will come. Whereas like there'll be months where that doesn't feel like that, you know?
Do you find that there's still, like, is there a story to this album? Does that still kind of happen in that same way?
You mean like a concept or just?
Not a con, you know, there's, you know, the Stones go to France and there's your story, you know, there's always some kind of hook to it. I mean, does that still exist in these sort of moments?
Yeah, I mean, not always with us, but in this, really, like I said earlier, the pandemic sort of informed this record in more ways than one. Number one was the surface of it. So we, like I said, we rarely, well, I'm not sure if I said this yet, but we rarely go in with a concept or an approach in mind. It's more like simple logistical stuff like, oh, Dave Minahan, let's use Dave Minahan in his studio, because he's one town away from me. So and all the guys are really close by, and we love Dave, so, and we love his studio, so why not do that? That's what we're going to do. But you know, as we get older, our hearing is more and more challenged. You know, tinnitus is an ever-present thing for all of us, and with the songs that we were writing during the pandemic, I mean, Chris and I pretty much always write on acoustic guitars. And we present stuff in an acoustic way. Now, Tom, being the one that's not necessarily bringing in song ideas, really kind of detected a theme within a lot of these songs, which was that not only were they presented acoustically, but they sounded like they were acoustic in tone and they wanted to remain acoustic in tone. So, I think that's, we went in going, okay, let's make this sort of an acoustic record. Let's really kind of keep it stripped down, almost like maybe a campfire type approach. But one thing led to another. We started putting on more guitars. It probably just ends up sounding like a Buffalo Tom record at the end of the day. But, it was almost like our, what is it? What's the REM record? Fables of Reconstruction.
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I can hear that too. And especially, listening in headphones as opposed to, I listen to a little bit in the car, et cetera. But when you get in there and you hear the acoustics, maybe it's because I knew about that a little bit, reading about it, but you really do hear that sort of take center stage in a way. And then maybe it was that I started thinking about the harmonies in terms of more of the 60s, than there's that little, because now we're in a bit of a jingle world, right?
And like, yeah.
So when you talk about informing, like I did hear that, I heard that as a bit more of a 60s influence record than maybe a 70s or something like that you would have done in the past. I mean, did you hear that? Did you notice anything like that as you were going along?
Yeah, it's a good observation. I mean, there are certain songs where we kind of took the Brian Jones and Rolling Stones approach. I mean, particularly Chris's songs, and maybe it's just me being the outsider coming to the songs that Chris wrote, whereas I'm less objective in my own songs, of course. But yeah, it definitely felt autumnal 60s kind of, like Aftermath kind of Stones record, but also very folky here and there. I mean, we've always been sort of folky because we tend to write on, like I said, acoustic guitars, and they we use a lot of big, because it's a power trio, quote unquote, it's a trio. I feel the need as a guitar player to fill up a lot of space. And for a guitar player, that means one guitar player has to fill up a lot of space. So big open ringing chords, I took that approach probably from certainly Neil Young, but usually has another guitar player with him, but Pete Townsend, you can have these big power chords, but they're really just a G, down on the first position of the neck. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I think the autumnal tone of it was also informed by whatever interior sort of introspective and melancholy feelings of the pandemic, of being home, lonely, concerned about what was going on in the world and our families and things like that. I think that's where the lyrical themes come in.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Bill Janovitz of Buffalo Tom. You hold no punches from the beginning with Helmet. There's a damaged captain at the wheel. We're going to need a mutiny to turn this ride around. So what's on your mind, Bill?
Yeah, it's still in my mind. Yeah, I mean, a lot of my songs, you're just kind of filling in. You're just filling in. I'm not one of those songwriters that starts with a lyric. I start with the music, and so you're kind of verbalizing things. And I don't know how that one started to come. But when we were college kids, not necessarily Buffalo Tom, but we did form in college. But friends of mine, you'd just be trying to make each other laugh with stupid things, especially in the more bong hits you did. And one of them was, it was a takeoff on the old adventure movies or whatever kind of movies where it's like, put your seatbelts on, we're going through hell here, or something like that. So it started with that kind of joke. And it is still light, but it's also very, it's deadly serious as well.
We can draw our own conclusions. And I quickly drew mine. It's hard not to when you think about, when would he have written this and who was the supposed captain at the wheel? Things start to line up and fall in place. That's it. I mean, then whether or not you're doing it lighthearted, you're making a big statement right from the beginning. I mean, that's.
Yeah. I mean, you're the first person to actually draw that line. I mean, I haven't talked to, I'm not sure if I've talked to anybody yet about this record aside from the people that we're working with. And, people want you to put a meaning on a song, and especially with political messages, which is certainly an undercurrent, if not an overcurrent here. I just don't want them to become about one thing or dated, because most of my songs are way more vague. This one is riding a metaphor to its death, I think. But yeah, no, that's definitely, you know, how do you write about something like what we've been through all these years with He Who Shall Not Be Named? I mean, how do you write it where it's just this crazy thing that we would never think we would be in, you know, this situation that, you know, when I was a kid growing up on Long Island, you know, Trump was everywhere. It's like, I just still can't believe that we're still dealing with this guy on this level. It's just absolute insanity to me. And I think that's certainly hinted at in the song. I hope that doesn't ruin it for anybody, but I think it could all be about a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's done so nicely. It's like you were kind of saying, and you know, and all the great ones were, even, you know, somehow even today we're able to sing Ohio from Neil Young, even right. though it's very specific. You know, you can have that specific and still be timeless. And then, yeah, I do think this one's cloaked enough. And you know, it's still hard not then to look at some of the other songs and try to find those, like you get to Our Poverty, which I wish I'd written down some of the lines. I didn't write the lines down in the same way I did with Helmet, but it feels like some of the best lyrics.
Oh, yeah, Our Poverty, yeah. Yeah, that one I wouldn't be able to tell you. I wouldn't be able to articulate any kind of particular specific meaning out of it. I mean, that's more of like automatic writing, I think. You know, it's that's something where sometimes the songs just write themselves in a lot of ways, musically and lyrically. And I'm not sure if that's completely the case. It's not like I just wrote the lyrics spontaneously while I was writing the music, although that, you know, that has happened a few times, but not so much in this case. I think a lot of it came that way, but inventive in Our Poverty is something I think I had written down. And I don't know why. I'm not dealing with poverty, so it's not a personal song. You know, it's my favorite quote about songwriting, I think, is from Richard Thompson, where he says, "The views of the singer are not necessarily those of the songwriter." You know, and that's something that people take for granted when somebody's writing fiction, but when somebody's writing a song, for some reason, I think the person singing it is and who wrote it is it's about them. It's autobiographical, which is
not the case. Well, the lyrics, I do remember really loving that, and then feeling like I kept thinking about John Hiatt, the way you were sounding on that song, you know, the way everybody was sounding on it. So there's something very much about that. Not that that's a question, just one of those thoughts that came to me while I was listening to it. It's like, oh man, this is I can hear John Hiatt doing this. It's
yeah, John. It's funny. We used to get compared to John Hiatt a little, even earlier in our career, and I don't really know John Hiatt very well. I mean, I know it. I know a lot of his work, but it's not like I'm a super fan or anything, but I do respect him enormously. And it's that singer-songwriter, sort of post-Bob Dylan kind of singer-songwriter, post-Laurel Canyon, you know, a little bit of Warren Zevon type songwriting as well. I mean, Warren's wit was way more sardonic, but, you know, John Prine, those new Dylan guys of the early mid-70s. And also Springsteen. I mean, you know, he's another guy that another writer who I respect enormously, of course. But I as far as fandom goes, I've only seen one Springsteen show, but my favorite Springsteen is that guy with the guitar, songwriter, Nebraska type stuff, you know. And I love Warren Zane's new book about that. That's my Springsteen. It's like, it's not the big bombastic Springsteen, although obviously that's fun, but it's that guy alone in a room kind of thing with a guitar.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Bill Janovitz of Buffalo Tom. I was actually, perusing your socials and everything, and I ran across something you had written in context of something else, because you wrote comedy plus time equals tragedy. Yeah, right. And I started thinking about that more in the context of music, how it's not the case always in music that it's not tragedy. It's almost the opposite sometimes, because I think you were also talking about one of your kids really enjoying Horse with No Name from America, and I thought, because that's true, these songs that we demonize in the moment for whatever reason, if you just give them time, they all become good. You know, it's
Well, you could look at this in many ways. It's an interesting can of worms. I was playing poker with some friends last night, and our poker games are really just excuses to sit around and drink beer and listen to music and stuff. And we were talking about Al Stewart, and I think I just started singing Time Passages for no reason. For some reason, something prompted me, and then we had this big discussion about Al Stewart and about everybody at the table except for me was like vehemently opposed to anything Al Stewart ever did. And I was like, you know, those songs have really grown on me. I mean, I see the same things in them that I made fun of when I was a kid. You know, this kind of elfin voice guy, you know, writing these very earnest lyrics that are about mysterious women or whatever. Year of the Cat. But now I listen to Year of the Cat unironically and enjoy it. Horse with No Name, I still can't even, I just can't even. But I love America's stuff. I mean, I love Ventura Highway and Sister Goldenhair. But it's funny what our kids kind of open up. They take the stuff that we love, they're like, what? You know, you can't listen to Bitch anymore. But then Horse with No Name apparently is fine. But I think with the, I mean, my, I was being very trite, or I'm not even sure if that's the word, with that little aphorism that it was a thread, I think. So, but it's interesting with the kids thing that you're bringing up, like comedy plus time equals tragedy is obviously turning around that little equation, the famous equation. But for me, it's about like, can my kids listen, can my kids watch Lost in America by Albert Brooks with the same and enjoy it? The answer is no. It's like comedy was, you know, comedy gets old fast, I guess is what I should say. You know, certain things, like I could not imagine putting on Eddie Murphy things for my kids right now, but that was like the epitome of comedy for us back then.
And was hilarious. My wife and I were watching Strangers of Candy. I don't know if you ever watched that one, you know. And that's one of those I hadn't revisited at least 20 years. And my son, he's 16. And you know, we watch some old stuff occasionally, but that's one of those where I was like, oh my God, how would like, you know, they're saying words that we do not go near as a whole episode, you know. It's and I was like, man, this and you have, you know, respectable people, of course, you know, Colbert is on there and everything. It's just like that's a time and place. And how do you explain that to your kid? Like, yeah, that was different.
I think our well, Mike mine are now 19 and 24, so they've already gone through their own round of people that they liked that are now canceled or whatever else. I mean, you know, the canceling is happening at a much faster clip, and but I mean, geez, I couldn't imagine putting on Richard Pryor or Cheech. I mean, Cheech and Chong maybe they would dig because they're both
Sure, stoner humor kind of stays the same. You know, I will quickly bring up, you know, it's sort of in the same context of this because, you know, you are a historian. You know, you dig and you dig and you become a biographer, it seems, more these days than, you know, just the musician. And with the latest one being the Leon Russell book last year, when you were so engulfed in that, do you find that that then affects anything that you're doing musically? The songwriting, this album, are those breadcrumbs there as well?
That's a great question. I don't know. I mean, Leon Russell. I'm not sure if anything is directed. It's not like all of a sudden I wanted somebody that can really pound out a piano like that, or necessarily write such either big sort of gospel infused stuff or like these. I mean, something like A Song for You is such a timeless song. I mean, I knew these songs though, so I don't know that it did, but learning to me the writing is not, you know, it's the benefit of to me is that I'm writing because I'm compelled to find out more about this stuff, and telling the story is just kind of reporting what I find, you know, for my own edification, really. You know, I don't look at it as like I need to inform the world of something, but it's more of like, oh, I want to go deep into this thing, and I might as well make a project out of it while I'm doing so. Which is why I do relatively few books because I'm, you know, it takes a lot of time and energy, obviously, to do something like this. So you kind of got to make it worth the time and effort. And I mean, this is another benefit. I'm not sure if this is the right word, but it's another byproduct anyway of of the pandemic is that I went into the pandemic with the project before the pandemic was sort of happening, but I looked at the being home sort of lockdown thing. It's like, oh no, I'm not going to be able to travel and go meet these people. But all of a sudden, everybody was used to doing these sorts of Zoom calls, so everybody was home. I mean, I got to talk to 138 people or something like that. Among them, Clapton, Elton John, Bruce Springsteen, Willie Nelson. I mean, it was incredible. So, and I really do think that was the byproduct of a lot of people just being having to stay put, really. So, and then it gave me all this time to devote to the actual research and writing of it.
Yeah. And now you're doing one for the Cars?
Yeah, I'm working on one for the Cars. And this is different, way different, a very, very different act, of course, every different artist. But I'm also dealing directly with the three surviving members, which is very different than writing a biography piece of somebody that's passed from voices in his life, in that person's life. Here I am dealing with a little bit of that because two of the members have passed on, the two, you know, sort of frontmen, Rick and Ben. But it's great to deal with, to work with Elliot Easton, one of my favorite guitar players of all time, David Robinson, a founding member of Modern Lovers and the Cars, and Greg Hawks, who's just a charming, he's the synth and keyboard player who lives a town away from me as well. So it's a really nice thing to be able to call up these guys and say, hey, let's go get lunch, you know?
I can't. I'm such a fan of that band too. I'm looking forward to seeing this when it eventually makes its way out there. So it's
it'll be there soon.
In the meantime, I'm so happy that there's a new Buffalo Tom album with Jump Rope, and I love this so much. This music that you all continue to do, Bill. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk about it today. It's been a real pleasure, man.
All right, take care, Kyle.
And my thanks to Bill. The new Buffalo Tom album is called Jump Rope. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button before you leave. You get three new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And don't forget to leave a rating and a review. Those are the two things, again, that go so far in helping a podcast like this grow. Subscribe, rating, review. That's your holy trinity of podcasts right there. After you do all that, head over to WFPK.org. So I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get the best in new music. There's lots of classics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. There's music news, bonus interviews as well. One of my recent episodes, featured the music of Nina Simone, The Specials, Counting Crows, The Doors, Pretenders, Bruce Springsteen, Joan Shelley, Pearl Jam, Slow Pulp, Devo, Lou Reed, Sheryl Crow, Amy Mann, The Beatles, Kurt Vile, Tom Waits, Echo and the Bunnymen, Noel Gallagher, Brittany Howard, Ratbag, Shelby Lynn, Grace Potter, Third Eye Blind, Radiohead, and my interview with Robbie Krieger of The Doors. Just an example of what you get every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the old social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.